So welcome to the nice and cozy room here at the top. If you think this is crowded, it's not, actually. We've seen this room even more crowded. 2 years ago, maybe somebody can remember who was here. We have had a TFS session, and it was the sun was shining the whole day, and we had the session at 4 p.m., and it was crowded. People started to fall off right in the middle of the session. It was so hot in here. So now it's really just comfortable, right? So I'm pleased to see so many people are here. I never believed those statistics who said that like 80% of all the teams worldwide do agile software development, everybody loves Scrum. And I never understood why so many people, if they're asked about the process, they check that they do agile processes. Why is that? Is it because they think, well, we don't do any of the other ones, so we take agile. Agile means no documentation. Right, we don't do any documentation. So we had that could be one reason. The other reason, have you created a Team Foundation Server project? And if you just click Next, what have you done? You've created a new team project with a process template of Agile, right? So the Microsoft Agile template for Team Foundation Server has a market share of 99.99% because 90% of the users have not even read that dialogue and just clicked Next. And so you have an Agile project, and this is where you start. But that doesn't really matter because everything you do in Team Foundation Server and Microsoft Visual Studio actually is agile. So it doesn't matter if you have the new Scrum template that Microsoft created or the Microsoft Agile template or Microsoft Solutions Framework for CMMI Process Improvement, Microsoft Process Template. They're all based for agile software developers and just have a few small things that are different. So why are we doing Scrum? Scrum, we're doing Scrum, or why is Microsoft talking about Scrum? We're doing Scrum because Scrum, the only goal of Scrum is to make your customer happy, and I assume this is your goal, more or less. Well, make yourself happy as well, get rich, work less, of course, but the customer is the one who pays us, and or the internal or external customer, and to make him happy, that's the goal of Scrum, and I hope this is also your goal. Is it your goal? Somebody telling us not his goal in front of so many other people? No. Good. So this is the reason why Scrum. So the reason I started to do more talks about TFS and Scrum as a combination is because Microsoft creates very flexible products, to say it in a very friendly way. So with a typical Microsoft product, let it be TFS or SharePoint or Windows, you cannot do just one specific thing, you can do everything. Microsoft creates platforms to solve any potential problem that could potentially arise at any time, people being hungry somewhere in the world or whatever. All the problems can be solved using one of those Microsoft platforms. The question is how to use those platforms efficiently. This is something where Microsoft has less material on. They sell the product, it's very flexible, you can do everything, but you have to think about how to use it. And it's the first time in Visual Studio 2010 that there's no Microsoft-owned training on how to use the team functions, those ALM functions in Visual Studio 2010. But what they have done is they partnered up with Scrum.org, which is one of those Scrum, not the Scrum Alliance, but another company doing Scrum. And they created a course, a 5-day course and a certification that talks about how to be a real good developer according to Scrum, how to have the correct tooling using the Microsoft flexible I can do everything platform. And even Scrum is not solving every problem of this world. And then still you have to use agile practices like test-driven development or things like, well, asking your customer what he actually wants and all the other problems that are unsolved in the world. So those three things make you a successful developer. You need something like a project management framework, which is Scrum. It does not go into the implementation detail. For that, you need agile practices like test-driven development, and you need the right tools. And the combination of those three things makes you successful. And this is why there is that new training format, and this is the only official and Microsoft Power training available for Visual Studio ALM in that time frame. Good. We will do the same stuff in less minutes than 5 days, and I'm pretty sure you'll like it. The first thing we need to decide is which process template we want to use, because you want to do Scrum. We need to start a new project now. So we start with that project creation, new project, NP, and need to select. This is the dialogue I was referring, right? You say next, and now you're an agile developer. And you go back, and you can rethink that again. So Microsoft says, okay, we have three templates. Two are out of the box. The third one is pretty new. It's the most recent one, the Scrum one. And you have to download that, install SharePoint templates, but it takes you like just 5 minutes or so. All three templates are agile. All three templates use small iterations to plan your project. All three templates think that there's a customer that he's the most important one. He's the goal while we do the project. So actually, the differences are very, very small. The difference between the agile template and the CMMI process improvement template, for example, is that all the items in agile are automatically active. Everything's active, whatever active means. This is the first state, the initial state. And in the CMMI template, everything that comes into the system is first proposed. Somebody has to look at it and decide, is it something we want to make active, or do we just want not to do it? So there's an approval process in there, for example. Now, since we are going to do Scrum, we have to decide, do we want to use Microsoft Agile template or the new Microsoft Scrum template, Visual Studio Scrum template, or maybe another Scrum template. There are many others out there. I'm not showing those. It's just the Microsoft stuff here right now. But there are many you can choose from. If you choose the Microsoft Visual Studio Scrum template, all the terms and all the Scrum concepts, and we go back to Scrum in a minute, will be in there, which is good. It will have less reports and less functions than the other two Microsoft templates. So yes, you're losing a little bit of functionality right now in that version one of that template. But what you're getting is a very easy to use template where you don't have like 50 reports. When will you look at 50 reports during a regular project? When do you have time to look at 50 reports and think what you want to change in the way you work? Never. So what you want is a few reports which are really full of value. And this is what the Scrum template does. It's very simple and to the point of Scrum. So I've created that project already, and we will start in a minute by importing a backlog. But first, back to one of the slides, which will hopefully maybe work, maybe not. It will not. So do you see it in the back? Do you see something on the left? Also no. Okay, good. So let's do it like this. That should work. Yeah, changing the resolution of PowerPoint templates a few seconds before the talk is a bad thing. Almost ready. Where is it? There it is. So Scrum on one slide, just to make sure we're talking about the same Scrum, because there are thousands of Scrum trainers and everybody tells the story a little bit different, so that we are on the same page. It starts on the left with the idea. This is where we start. We have a customer. The customer has money. Otherwise, he wouldn't call us. And he wants something. And the result should be a product, and the product should be of a defined quality. Maybe we have a date when it has to be ready, but we don't care about dates. We're developers, right? So because even if I get a date as a developer, am I faster? Just because I know the date? No, I'm not. Am I faster because I do estimates? I'm not as well. So what do we learn? No estimates, no dates, just program. Let the other guys handle the dates and the stuff and the contract making. That's not the problem of a typical developer. But we have to solve it anyway. So we have an idea, and the customer talks to the first role in Scrum, which is the product owner. And the product owner is one of the most important roles. So well, this is nice. It's not intended to, though. What is this? Have you ever used that? That's cool. Looks like a PowerPoint feature. Huh. The product owner is the one that represents the customer. So he's our primary contact for everything that the customer wants, for questions about the requirements, for prioritization of our time. So what's the most important thing to do next? This is what we address to the product owner. He's responsible that the customer gets value out of the product. The more value he gets after a few weeks, the better. This is what the product owner does. You could call him a, from the customer standpoint, a customer return on investment maximizer. That's actually him. So this is his goal. Maximize return on investment from the customer, increase customer value. That's his goal. So he will talk to the customer, and as a result, we will have a product backlog. The product backlog contains everything we could potentially do and add to that product. A product backlog is something really great. You all know what backlogs are, right? We called them to-do lists in the former times. What was before the product backlog in software development? It's a new term, right? So what was before? We created things like release plans, where we, let's say you called Microsoft 10 years ago and you had said them, I have a great idea for Microsoft Word. Please put that into your product. And they would tell you things like, well, we're not in the release planning right now, So we can't write that down because the document is now finished. Come back when we do the release planning for the next version. This is how we've done software, right? There's a huge document, and if the document's done, you can't add something, and you have to come back to the next planning session. With backlogs, you have an ongoing, unlimited-sized list of things you could potentially do or never do. It doesn't tell you anything. If you now call Microsoft and have an idea, they will say, thank you, we added it to the backlog. What does it tell you? Nothing. Might never be done. But they've written it down into a system, they have an ID for it, you can ask where it is, probably not in the first 10,000 items, but anyway, you can ask. And the product backlog is also new features, it's changes in features, it's new, now new bugs sounds crazy, but new bug reports. Everything you want to do that has to be prioritized is on the backlog. Everybody's supposed to put things on the backlog and allowed to, and only the product owner is allowed to do the priority, because the order is purely based on what the customer values. And this is definitely different than what we as developers might value. I remember I had a project, it was a huge VB6 project, and we convinced our customer to rewrite it completely in .NET 10 years ago. And we spent a lot of money, we had the new version, we went to the customer to do a presentation of the new .NET version. He looked at it and he said, well, that looks like the old version in VB6. What have you done the whole year? It looks the same. Yes, it looks the same. That's what we tried. I mean, it was a whole lot of work to make it look the same. He didn't really see a benefit from all that work. So then we bought a new controls suite and new icons, high-resolution icons for our software, a new toolbar with the new icons on it. And then he said, well, Microsoft.NET, I want that. That's great. The icons, oh, I want it. So you see, customers have different priorities. It's not about code quality. They don't care if you have coding conventions. It's like buying a car. They care how a car looks like, that it doesn't break after the next corner. Okay, that's also something they care about. But they don't care how you developed it, right? So customer value is the driving factor. The product owner is the one that does the priorities. So he's responsible for the what is going to be done in future. What are we going to do? He defines those what elements, those so-called product backlog items or user stories. It's the same thing. Now there's the team. We are the team. The team consists of everybody necessary to actually create that software. That includes everything, includes testing, includes integration, includes writing documentation, whatever you want to do to create a done product, a potentially shippable product that is one click away from you can give it to your customer. All that has to be done by the team. If there's no database guy in the team and you have a database, you have a problem. Also without Scrum, you have a problem if you don't have anybody with that skill, but Scrum really shows you that you have a problem. The optimum team size of Scrum, do you know what the Scrum guide says for team sizes? Which is the optimum?
Seven,
right? Plus minus two is like is okay. If you have less than five people in a team, it's not as creative as with 5 to 9 people. So the creativity, because in Scrum you do estimates together, you do the architecture together, you get many ideas, something you haven't thought about, somebody else in the team has that idea. So with five or more people, you have an ongoing discussion about architecture and stuff. With less than five people, you don't profit from that as much. And not more than 9 people, because it's very, very hard to coordinate more than 9 people. And studies have shown that it doesn't make sense to have more than 9 people on a team. Wait. Football. How many people are on a football field? I tell you, if your team would have just 9 people playing football, they would be better than the other team with 11. You really have to try that. Maybe not, but so they're doing something fundamentally wrong in soccer and football, right? Good. So the team is entirely responsible for the how. So the product owner said what we're going to do, and only the team decides how we're going to do that. How are we organizing the team? Who's doing what? What tools are we going to use? How are we organizing our work? That's all up to the team. The product owner doesn't care. The team knows it has to commit to an amount of product backlog items and has to show a ready-to-use and integrated product increment after a few weeks, after a defined sprint length of maybe 2, 3, or 4 weeks. So they know that, and they have to create their own tasks and organize their work and estimate their work. And they have to commit. The commitment is also a very important part. So the product owner presents the new stories, which are to be done, and then the team looks at them, they do a very rough estimation, and then they say things like, we do commit to those three items, or whatever they think they can do. They really have to commit to be actively involved in selecting their items, and not somebody telling you you have to do those four items until deadline is and you have a date. Because that works way better if somebody says, I commit to something, than if you tell him you have to until. Because you don't care. I have to? I don't care. But if I said I will do, that's a different story. So there are many interesting parts of Scrum as an organizational technique. So when the team is sitting in the first meeting, in the sprint planning meeting, and they have committed to a few work items, which was the first part, to which product backlog items they want to do. Now they do the architecture together. They estimate the details together. They do a first architecture. They create a list of tasks. And that list of tasks is part of the sprint backlog. And then we start with a sprint. So they have a few weeks. Usually it's something around 2 to 4 weeks. 2 weeks is recommended. And every day you meet up with the team. You have a daily scrum. In the daily scrum, only the team does a stand-up meeting where they talk with each other about the progress. They want to inspect if they can still do it or if they have to tell the product owner we will not make it in time. It's really an inspection of progress for the team only. Every day, daily scrum. And after 2 weeks, they have to show the product increment. This is the review meeting. No PowerPoint is allowed. They have to show working software. There's only one version of that software allowed to be shown, so it has to be integrated, not every developer showing a different version of the software. And everything has to be done so that it's one click away from being shippable. If the product owner says, release now, they should be able to do that. During that sprint review, that last meeting, we have customers sitting in that meetings often. So you can invite them. It's an open meeting. You really want to show this is transparency, this is our project, this is how far we've gone. If we've done all that and we have a product increment and everything worked hopefully good, we have the retrospective. This is one of the major parts of Scrum because Scrum believes in when you have a meeting or a dedicated time where you can think about what to improve, you can really get better. Usually in a typical project, there is no time to improve. You know what's going wrong. You know you always wanted to do more tests. You know that. But there's no time, right? It's always something more important or something here, something there. So if you have Scrum, at the end of Scrum, you have this retrospective. So this is a few hours where the team meets and they decide what went well, what did not went too well, or what could be improved on. And they create one or two tasks that will be done during the next sprint, the next iteration, to improve the situation. Maybe install a build server or add a few automated checks for testing or whatever. So that every sprint actually has 1 to 2 improvements of our process, technologies, maybe even people, right? The retrospective can also decide that certain people are not the right ones for our project, or the product owner is not behaving as he should like it's described in the Scrum Guide. And that this all really works out, we have a third role, which is the Scrum Master. And in a successful Scrum project, the Scrum Master has nothing to do. Because he's there to check that we're really doing Scrum. So he will come to us and say, well, you're not doing a daily Scrum every day, so you're not doing pure Scrum. And he can tell me the advantages why we should do a daily Scrum meeting. But he's nothing more. He's not a manager or nothing else. He just checks if we're doing Scrum, and if not, he will let us know. So he's giving his advice. He's a coach, a trainer. And if we noted down that anything is not doing well, in a so-called impediments list, things that block us from being 100% productive, then he is supposed to take those impediments from the impediments list and remove them, remove barriers that we can work. For example, one thing, Scrum says every external request has to come to the product owner first, and he decides what to do. Nobody's talking directly to the team, I need this, I need that, or whatever. So the team is shielded so they can have their productive developer flow for 2 weeks and nobody's disturbing them every few minutes to get higher productivity. Of course, critical bug fixes still exist, but we can keep the number low if possible. So the product owner is supposed to shield the team. If that doesn't work, the Scrum Master will tell him, you're doing something wrong. As a good product owner, nobody's allowed to talk to the team directly. Okay, that was Scrum in a few minutes. I think probably you've heard a few things of those. Maybe something was new. And now the question, how can we do that in TFS? TFS obviously can do a lot of processes. It's very agile, but it's not 100% dedicated to Scrum or something, but now there is a Scrum template that we can use. So how do we start? Usually we start with a product vision, and there is no place to write that vision down. Maybe we can take the SharePoint project portal. I mean, the idea behind a product vision is that everybody in a sentence or two really knows why we are building this kind of software. Something like, we are building a new calculator application to be the best one in the world because the others are way too complicated and our calculator knows the result before you even told him what to calculate. I don't know, something like this. So we can go, for example, to the team wiki. It's a new project, so the reports are still not refreshed. They're refreshing every 2 hours. It's a C# website, you know, it compiles on the first click. And we can go to the wiki and maybe write down, okay, or create a new page with our product vision to just have it somewhere. Product vision. And our product vision for today is have a Dev Days talk that explains the audience how to do Scrum with TFS 2010. That's our vision for today. Create. Good. We noted down the product vision. Once we have a product vision, we need to define a few small things, and then we can start. We need an initial backlog of ideas, what the customer wants to tell us. And there are many tools we can use to work with the backlog. One of the favorite tools for former project managers, there's no project manager in Scrum anymore, is obviously Scrum, Excel, the market leader in everything, if you didn't know. In all categories, market leader, I think, is Excel. So what am I looking for? I need a description field. Give me the HTML description field. I need acceptance criteria. Those both to the end. Now we have a perfect backlog. And I have prepared something already. This is the really good thing about Excel. You can just prepare something and do the mass copying. There we go. And see, we have a backlog. No, we don't have a backlog. Why don't we have a backlog? It looked so correct a few seconds ago. Title, assigned to. Oh, we're missing the assigned to, obviously. Assigned to, state. State is new. Effort is this one. There's a business value. No, I have no business value behind this. There's definitely no business value. Yes. No. Don't. Refresh. Undo. Help. There's help. Now nothing's happening anymore. This is also good. Just get me a new Excel file. So you see, it's not a really friendly tool for developers. I'm sure a typical project manager really knows how to do this. But at least we're not using Microsoft Project or such. So oh, it's not opening anymore. It's getting better. Open. What's this? That's an interesting one. So we need to enter our backlog items now. It looks like it will be a more manual process than I had planned. Just say no. See? We will copy them over. Second try. Second and last try. Open Excel. Did I say that it's a good thing to do mass copying? We have no business value, but we definitely have acceptance criteria, and we have the new HTML formatted description field, which you want to use. And they are at the end. And now, put that in here. It's still not correct, but it looks better. It's a mixture of something that I can't explain what it is. Any experts on Excel here? No. Let's try this. Validation errors. What's the error? Provided for iteration path does not meet. Yes, that's true. That's a very complicated one, iteration path. Iteration path is very important in a few seconds when we start with the release planning. Now effort is not of the right type. Who is effort? He is effort. Bye-bye. Thank God, only three left. Of course, when I prepared it, everything worked as usual. Yeah, you don't believe me anyway, but that's fine. There we go. It's now in the system. Do we have IDs? We have IDs. First backlog is in the system. So the first thing I wanted to show you, and actually it worked better than I expected, is that Excel is not the best tool to manage a product backlog. That's the true point. Because if I want to start and reprioritize things, which I, as a product owner, I'm supposed to do, how am I going to do that? There is a column called backlog priority with numbers in there. If I want to put something between 1 and 2, well, maybe it would have been a better idea to use things like in old basic times. So we now have the possibility to put something in between. But it's just not easy to just move things around and have a prioritized list as you would like to. So this is not the optimum approach. Microsoft Project is neither. Then we have the product backlog in Visual Studio, which is also nice, but still you cannot just drag and drop things up and down to get a priority in here. But again, we have a backlog, which is nice, but no priority. So there is no tool right now for Microsoft that really does a backlog that you can drag and drop up and down, but one of the Microsoft Gold partners was so nice to provide one. And it's here in the Team Web Access. So it integrates into the web interface, and I'll use that for the talk because it's way easier, so you see in a graphical way what we're doing here. And now it's compiling the Team Web Access, and now it has compiled the Team Web Access, and now we will connect. We will connect to the Dev Day Scrum project, and we will open the planning board. So the planning board is one of two views in that software. That software is called Urban Turtle. It's a Scrum experience for TFS. And now you see a backlog, and now you can finally do things like moving things up, moving things down, and it will handle the priorities for you. Is that really a good thing? I don't know. Let's look at the field. So now the priority of that item is, what is it? 2,500,000. Okay. So I'm not sure if it's really a better number, but the representation is definitely better. So we have a backlog, initial backlog, which is prepared. The product owner so knows what we want to build. We have a vision. We have to define a sprint length. In a typical project, it might be something like 2 weeks, so 10 business days that a Scrum project will run for. And anything else we need to define? I think that's it. Sprint length is defined, product vision is defined, definition of done. Okay, we have to define done so that we know what we are going to do in that 2 weeks for every product backlog item. And then we've prepared the backlog. Now it's sprint planning time. We start a sprint with sprint planning, and sprint planning has two distinct parts. The first part, decide on what we are going to do, the what part, and then how we are going to implement it as a team, the team how part. So in the first part, the product owner shows his backlog. Which he has here, and he should make sure in the Scrum template that he sets the status to approved, because this state makes way more sense than just new. Let's look at the state diagram for a minute for a typical product backlog item in Scrum. So it looks a little bit nicer in the Microsoft help file, but anyway you can get a real-life view on the currently customized template. So the Microsoft Scrum template has very meaningful names. Everything that is put on the backlog is new. That's just the starting state. It's new. And then as a product owner, you have to decide if you want to approve it or remove it from the backlog. If it's removed, it goes to the removed state. If it's approved, it goes to the approved state. Once it's approved, it stays on the backlog and is approved until the team says, we are committing us for that item for the next sprint, then we are setting the state to commit it. This happens during sprint planning part 1. And then there's only a done state when the team reaches their definition of done, which means implemented, tested, integrated, checked in, and the product owner is happy with the result. So the product owner here has to set everything to approved first. And then we are in the sprint planning meeting and we start, okay, we want to do those three items. We read those items in the meeting together. The product owner presents what he really means. And there's on the left side the description, which is HTML. On the right side, there's acceptance criteria. So we can use the typical user story syntax if we want to as a type of user. It really makes sense to always have the target audience, the target user type in that sentence and to have that on the beginning. So once you read the sentence, you always think about that user that is using your software because maybe there are different types or kinds of users. So you automatically think with a view of that user. As a type of user, so let's say as a typical conference attendee, then it's the goal, what you want to do, and then we have a reason as well. So as a typical conference attendee, I want to get most out of a session. This is also the easy part, right? If you ask a customer, what do you want? He can tell you, I want a new column there. I want a bigger button there. I want this, I want that. That's what he knows. But now is the third thing that we will ask him. Why? What's the reason why you want it? And then the customer says, I don't know. What's the intent behind it? I have to think. In all Microsoft samples, what do you think how the user stories look like? They have the role and they have the goal and no reason because it was too tough for the people building that sample to think about the reason because it's a tough thing. So what is the reason why our conference attendees want to get most out of a session? Maybe to impress my boss. And if this is the case, we can now as a team tell our customer, well, you know, we have a better idea how you can maybe impress your boss. Maybe it's not the new column you want. Maybe you want a totally different view. Now we can really help him and give him a new solution to his problem because now we know his problem, the reason. Did I mention this is now an HTML field? It wasn't before in TFS. If you use that Scrum template, you can do everything you can do in HTML. And I see many project owners using that in future. I'm not sure I like that though. But this is how it will be. So better you get used to it now. Something like this. Beautiful, huh? And every change you do will obviously be tracked in the change log, so you can see the last change I've done from non-colored to colored. Nice. So the product owner explains what he means by those stories. And we as a team are not supposed to do an estimation. It's really only an estimation. We don't tell him when will we be ready. We don't know. This is the typical software project. You can't know when a software will be ready if you're building something new because you've never done it before. If it's a software you've done before, you can probably just buy it or copy it or whatever. You don't have to recreate it. Software projects mostly are newly created parts which have not existed before in that sense. And there's a high risk, and you don't really know how long they will take. They're pretty complex. Requirements will change over time. So it doesn't really make sense to do a very fine-grained estimation at this point. So on the whole stories here, we'll do a very, very simple approach and only do a relative estimation. Relative estimation means you can assign things like t-shirt sizes. So you say, if this is a medium item, then this is extra large, and this is a small one. Just to have a relative sense. And then the customer can exchange things that you have not started working on. So he can do things like, okay, I have here a new user story. Can you tell me how big this is? And the team says, well, looking at the other items, I think this is medium. Okay, so if I want to put that medium item on the backlog, what do I have to remove for the same price? Well, another medium item or two small ones maybe. So you can do trading with your customer on this, on those estimates, which are very, very high level. So t-shirt sizes works. There's also the notion of story points so that you can use points for the same thing. So if you say this story has 1 point of effort, this has 2 points, then 2 points means it's twice the size or twice the complexity to develop. So we have to put those points somewhere. And we have that category here, and it's the effort field that made the trouble in Excel. So we can say this, why Scrum is only a 1. Let's get out of here, save and close. And if this is only a 1, then Scrum Overview is twice as big, so we'll give it a 2. And the process templates in TFS, that takes a lot of time to explain. Let's give it a 5 or even a 10. So now we have those story points, and we decide which ones of the stories we will commit to as a team. When we commit, we do 2 things. We set the state to commit it, and we move the items we want to do into the sprint iteration. So it assigns the iteration field to sprint 1. So let's take 4 here. And now I have 4 stories in here in my iteration, in my sprint 1 backlog. Part 1 is done. We have committed to what we want to do. Let's check the state. The state is not uncommitted. Let's do committed for all items. We as a team committed. Not even approved. Our product owner really doesn't know how to use the TFS. Like in real life. First approve, save, then go to committed, save and close. So now we have 4 committed items booked on sprint 1. If we go to Visual Studio, there is a work item query for the current sprint backlog, and we see those 4 backlog items. And please ignore those beautiful priorities. But the order is correct. So technically, Scrum says the sprint backlog only has tasks which the team assigns themselves to do the work, to organize the work. In TFS, you will always also see the product backlog items, just to know if the task belongs to one of those product backlog items, a grouping header. So this is the reason why you see those tasks in here. And now you can start doing not only product backlog items, but adding tasks to it. Do something, save, close. Do something else, save, close. You always have to refresh manually because TFS is never refreshing for performance reasons. And now you can see we have 2 tasks below it. So this is the second part of sprint planning. The team assembles. The product owner is still there, but now in read-only mode. So he's only there if you have questions. But the team discusses how are we going to do that. We've selected the product backlog items. What tasks do we have to do? Who's doing what? Who's developing? Who's doing the testing? Can we work together? Do we have enough to keep everyone busy on the team? How will we organize ourselves? There's no project manager anymore who says how the team will organize. The team is most effective if they organize themselves. They know how to do software development. They will find the best and most effective way and the shortest path to the clearly defined end. But you have to really define the result. So those user stories need to be very clear, very precise. You need to define the end result that you expect from your team, and then they can do the work. I could have done the same thing here in my web access. Also in here, let's do a refresh. I now see the tasks, and I could have added them here as well. Please add a task. Some task for my team. There it is. And those tasks will also be estimated at the beginning of a sprint. And that is pretty fine-grained, but it's easy because a task is typically not longer than a day, and a sprint is typically just 10 working days. So those tasks are pretty easy to estimate. So we really do our estimation here to have a remaining work count. So every task gets remaining work. Let's say this is 8 remaining hours. And the other one here is also 8 remaining hours. And now we haven't told you when the Scrum sprint will start and when it will stop. So the iterations in TFS, if you have used them already, there's something missing on the iterations. You can't say when they start and when they stop. They just have a name, which is nice. But how about having a start and end date? This is not in TFS today, but there's a workaround for it in the Scrum template. They have a sprint work item type. And if you use that sprint work item type, it's easy to open it using this info icon. But there's also the possibility to do it in Visual Studio. There's an old sprints, and for every sprint there's exactly one work item, and you can set the start date and the finish date, and it will be used for the diagrams. So our sprint starts today and it ends today. No, that's not good. We need a 1 week sprint at least. And the sprint goal, you can write it down. This is my sprint goal, to have it somewhere. The sprint goal is a sub-goal of your vision or your release goal. And now, with that information, I can go back to Web Access and ask him for a burndown chart. So the burndown chart sums up all the tasks, all the remaining work of the tasks, and tells me how much work is left. And today, we have a remaining work of 16 hours. So if you really want to get done by next week, May the 5th, this is the ideal trend. We have to be below, or at least somewhere near the line. And if we're at the middle and we're still way over the line, we can go to the product owner and tell him, well, I think we overcommitted. It's way better to know that you overcommitted a few days earlier than the end of the sprint. A senior project manager once told me, it's not a bad thing that projects go wrong or you overcommit or things. It's just a problem if I just hear it for the first time the evening before. That's a real problem if you miss a deadline. So to not miss a deadline, that hour burndown chart, that sprint burndown chart, is your tool. So the target audience for this chart is the team itself. When you do the daily scrum, and you should do the daily scrum as a stand-up meeting, so it gets shorter because while you're standing, you will be more precise and faster talking usually. There's also one team I had, they've done their daily scrum. They had placed it always right before the lunch break. So their reason was it will be even shorter if it's right before lunch break. Hungry people don't talk too long, right? They want to go and eat something. And the typical daily scrum is considered to not be a discussion, right? So everybody says, what have I done? An answer to the question, what have I done till the last daily scrum meeting? What am I going to do today? And what are my impediments? What is blocking me in my work? You say those three things, and the next one, it's his turn, right? There's no discussion. There's no, oh, what I wanted to ask you, and by the way, since I see you here. No, you just do it very briefly, before lunch maybe, and then you are informed, and then you can use the lunch break to talk to the other people and ask them, oh, well, I heard you're going to modify something in module A. I'm working in the same module today. Maybe we should synchronize. Or I heard your problem. I had the same a few days ago. I have a class that actually fixes it. So there's a collaboration, a learning experience together, but it's meant to be an inspection of progress. Are we still in time for this 2 week sprint or not? So the burnout chart is not for the product owner or somebody who manages the project, it's for the team itself. And if it really works, then it might look something like this. You see a typical line. It's not untypical that at the beginning of the sprint, you are slower than the ideal trend for many reasons. Because you're doing a lot of startup, you're doing a lot of architecture, you're not really burning away your tasks already. And it might also be that when you initially created those tasks during sprint planning, you didn't know everything, right? I mean, you discovered things later. The further you go, the more you discover, and then you have more tasks. That means if you discover additional work, add a task at any time in the sprint, so everybody in your team sees we are above the ideal trend. We will not make it in time. Good, so we are in a sprint, we have committed to work, we have created our tasks, we have created our remaining work estimates in hours so that we can track using the burndown chart. And this is a good thing. And now we will follow in Visual Studio, we will see the same tasks, and now we start moving those tasks into a new state. Those tasks have a very simple state model. They are to do when they are created, because nobody has done them before. Then you can indicate with in progress that you're actually working on them. And once you set them to done, which I can't right now before I save it, then you indicate that task is done. It's not the same as the done on the product backlog item. A done on the product backlog item means everything that this product backlog item defines is done, plus your whole definition of done, what you as a team has is done, plus the product owner is happy. That's the definition of done of a product backlog item. Of a task, done just means it's done. I mean, we've done it. Is it, are you asking for a graphical representation to see that, or just say yes? Okay, I give you €5, you say yes?
No, I mean the
anybody for 10? Okay, see? Oh, wait, where's my, yes?
No, I mean the list, the entire backlog, and every backlog item has a list of sub-items, but in all sub-items of a backlog,
so yes and no. So there's no magic that looks at the tasks below a product backlog item. If they are all done, the product backlog item is not moved. So it's not automatically reflected somehow. And it's an interesting question because as a product owner, I'm not looking at tasks. Because tasks is something the team does for themselves. I don't care about them. So I only see those four product backlog items. And if the team doesn't change anything on the product backlog items, I don't see it. So I don't get any visual or whatever representation. Right. So I have to believe that my team is clever enough, after all the tasks are done, to go to the very nice described product backlog item and move that to the done state. And the reason why this is the case is because although all tasks are done, it might still be that you have something on your definition of done what you want to check before you close the product backlog item. This is why it's not automatically going to done or something.
But if you set it to done, it might not be really done yet. You cannot set it to done as a team because you still
okay.
Clarify with the customer. There's a
yes. I see your point. You can add states if you like, right, to have those scenarios. And there's also no state for, if you look at the product backlog item, there's no distinction between the team says we're done and the customer or the product owner says we're done. So there's only one done. And how you want to handle this, you have to decide. I've seen teams that where the team puts it to done, and then after the sprint, we have the review meeting. And if the product owner says, well, I don't like it, then we will reopen it and put it back on the backlog. Well, actually, you don't put it back on the backlog, but you create a copy of what we'll do in a few seconds. Yeah. But anyway, if you have more than three tasks, like in my example, so usually you have a few more tasks for a team of a few people that work for 2 weeks, it gets a little bit messy, the whole thing. And it's all still only in lists and not very beautiful. So again, we have that Urban Turtle tool where you can go to the task board view. And the task board is something that is known from many agile processes. And you can use that for something that is not Scrum as well, right? It just takes work items from TFS. And you see your requirements or product backlog work items that you selected. You see two of them here. And you see the tasks below. The tasks are now to do. And I can now move them over to in progress. And what it does is, of course, it sets the state to in progress, but it also takes my username and assigns the work to me, because right now it's not assigned to anybody, and now it's assigned to me and moved to in progress. And if I move on and say this is now done, it will automatically not only set the state, but also set remaining work to zero. Okay, it was zero, so that's not very easy. See, now it's zero and still my work item. So it does a lot of the things that you would have to manually do in Visual Studio, and now it does that on that web interface. You only see two product backlog items here. The other two are hidden. Why? Because they don't have any task below yet. Once you create tasks, they would pop up into the other area. Let's create a task below. A task. No, there's no 16 hours because a task should fit into 1 day. So 8. 8 is maximum. Well, even 8 is a little bit much, but so see, now it's popping up here. And now it's still assigned to nobody. Now it's assigned to me. And now the remaining work is 0, and the states are updated accordingly. You can open that and check what happened. It was a new task, so it went to the to-do state, then the work was started, it went to in progress, and then the work was finished and went to the done state. So you can see that in the changelog. So, but all that stuff, like the task board, you can use that for any process. You don't have to do 100% Scrum or something, but it really helps if you want to organize many tasks below such items that describe the requirements. Good. So back to Visual Studio. We have seen the new work item types. Let's see which ones we've missed. So we've used product backlog item, and below we've used the task, which is nice. We have the bugs as well. If an external customer files a bug, we will treat it exactly as the product backlog item. It's still a code change. We still have to do something. The product backlog item just says that he expected something different if it's a bug. But it's still the same kind of thing. It goes into the backlog, and the product owner has to know or has to decide what is more important, that new feature, that new product backlog item, or that bug. There's only a certain amount of development time available. You always have to reprioritize what is more important in terms of customer value. You know many great software vendors which have bugs in their versions for years and years and years because some product owners decided that that bug is not of enough value compared to other features, obviously. So this is now your new reason if somebody asks you why you're not fixing the bugs, right? Oh, from the customer value standpoint, it wasn't important enough. Well, you're not the product owner, probably. Okay, we have product backlog item, task, and bug. Bug equals product backlog item, just with another, it has the same state model, just a few other fields. Then we have the impediment. Impediments are filed by team members if something is not working as it should be in the team. So if something is not efficient, we're not 100% productive, we file an impediment, and the Scrum Master is the one reading them and trying to remove those impediments. For example, we would be way more productive if we would have our own team room, because right now we have to do the daily sprint somewhere outside of the building, right next to a loud street. Oh no. Description help. So now it's on the impediment backlog. So we have a query for that. It's all open impediments, and it's not in here because I forgot to say it's an impediment in sprint one. Now here it is. And as a Scrum Master, I can look at it and I can ask myself, can I remove that impediment? As a Scrum Master, I'm not the owner of this company. I can't. But what can I do? I can go to the owner of a company and tell him, hey, I'm a Scrum Master in one of your teams here in your company. Can you maybe build a new room or whatever, or build a new house for the team? He will say no, and that's it. Nothing changed. It's also the same as without Scrum. There's only one big difference. You can have those impediments somewhere on the wall, clearly visible for everybody. So nobody can say they didn't know. They have a clear and transparent list of all things why you're not 100% productive. And if management wants, they can take one of those impediments from your wall and do something against it, build a new room. If they don't want to, okay. But they know you're not 100% productive. And that makes a difference. You can write down skills you always wanted to learn, and maybe you're getting a training, maybe you won't. But that's the impediment backlog. So it's not only transparency against the customer that he sees what's all in the backlog and how it's prioritized, it's also transparency for our management to see we're not productive because we are lacking people or skills in our team, right? Something's missing and we're not 100% productive. We probably know it on the team, but the externals don't know it. So what else do we have? We have things like the sprint work item. We've seen that where we enter the start and the finish date. That's the workaround so that the reports have their dates to work with. And there's a test case and a shared step if you want to do test case management during the sprint to extend the definition of a product backlog item. You can use those. Now, technically, all those work items are regular work items, and they're connected using links. So what we've done with the tasks is we connected them with a parent-child relationship, and we can have other link types as well. This is the list of Microsoft link types they have put into the Scrum template. So you can say something is a parent of, something is a child of, something is the predecessor or the successor of something. Something is a test case that tests a product backlog item, and a product backlog item is then tested by a test case. So that's all what you can do. And you can write your own ones if you like. I'm sure you always wanted to have your own link type, so you can connect two work items with a link called has nothing to do with. That makes sense, right? Very good. So let's go to my favorite client for TFS. It's called the command line. Some of you will remember. And we will connect to the collection. It's server to go / default collection. And please export all links into the file name linktypes.txt. My favorite Visual Studio replacement. Very good. Let's keep one, the related one. Those are the Microsoft-defined link types. We don't need them. We want another one. We always wanted to create the dev days. That's the internal name. Work items, Scrum, has nothing to do with. Those link types are always showing into two directions, so it's always bidirectional. So you always have two arrows that are drawn. And if you choose the network topology, you have to use the same name. In this case, it was related, and now it has nothing to do with. That's the label on the arrow, so to speak. Yeah, almost. There we go. Import. Refresh certainly makes sense. Refresh done. And now you can add a new task, not as a child, but it has nothing to do with the other task. Great, huh? Now there's a link, has nothing to do with product backlog item 26. Product backlog item 26 has definitely nothing to do with task 49. So this is one of the possible link types. There are other link types with different arrow names. So you could call it A has nothing to do with B, but B has absolutely nothing to do with A. So that's also possible if you want to do that. Maybe you have better ideas than I have. I don't. So drop me an email with great ideas for new link types. But that's how it technically works and how those parent-child relationships are maintained in TFS. Yes, you can do the same thing in Excel. So if you really like Excel, I'm not a big fan of, as you know, you can do that. You can also see those relationships in here. You can open the links and attachments and see that it has nothing to do with. So it's not hidden in Excel. And you can also see the hierarchy, although it's a little bit strange because it creates one title column per hierarchy level. But still, it's a hierarchy. And if you want to do a deeper hierarchy, you can just get a few tree levels and then start adding data here and remove those if you don't need them. Good. So now where are we? Back to our task board to see where we are. So all the tasks are done. So we're coming closer to a sprint review. And the sprint review, just to remind you, the customer is invited, so it makes sense to be prepared for that meeting because he inspects the progress and we are showing real working software. So it might make sense to try the projector before the meeting. It might make sense to actually think about who's presenting and not trying to find that out on stage while your customers are waiting. So there are really things you can prepare. Maybe the team decides that somebody who's really good at presenting should do the presentation and not somebody who's really not the right one to do it. Anyway, the sprint review starts. It's the last meeting that has something to do with the product, and then there's only the retrospective, and then the sprint is over. So everybody's invited, and the product owner gets the biggest seat because he's the one who has to approve or deny and reject work. So he's sitting there, he's getting a massage from the team, you bring him coffee, fresh coffee, and everything he likes so that he will approve all the work you've done. And again, one integrated version, no PowerPoint, and you go from product backlog item to product backlog item and show what you've done. You can only do that if you're really done. If you have not reached your definition of done, you're not supposed to show that product backlog item, right? Only done items are allowed to be shown. Good. Now what will happen if we decide that one of those product backlog items that the team has set to done is not really done? So we're presenting that item, and the product owner says, well, I'm not too happy. I think I'll reject that. I think you have to rework that. We can't release now. We failed the sprint because it was not implemented as I expected it. So maybe in the next sprint we have to do something better, but we can discuss that during the retrospective. So let's just undone it, so to speak. Let's go back to something like committed. And now in Scrum it says, put it back on the backlog, which makes sense from a logical perspective, right? It's not done, it goes back to the backlog, and maybe we'll do it to the next sprint if there's time, or not if something else is more important. But technically, you have all those tasks hanging right below, and all the remaining work and effort tracking hanging below that item. If you just put it back on the backlog in the next sprint, you have all the old time information now on the next sprint, which is completely wrong. So the only thing that makes sense is you create a copy from that product backlog item and put that on the backlog. So you can remove parts that are already done. You get a new ID. Those two can be related using a link type, like has nothing to do with, or this might be actually a good reason for a link type. But there is a related link type that we can use. So you would probably create a copy, and you could do that in Visual Studio. You see that I'm moving between clients all the time because every client has something that is not in the other clients. So Visual Studio is the number one client for showing the form, like the work item form, the dialogues. It's pretty neat. You can copy work items pretty nice. In Excel, theoretically, mass operations are very easy, and you can copy and paste things from other sources if it works. In Microsoft Project, you could take all the tasks and see the critical path, how long it will take you in dates, and create a project plan. And with the Urban Turtle, the extension for the web access, you have a nice representation of the same data, just in another way. I wanted to create a copy. I wanted to take the Y Scrum, right-click, create copy of work item created in the same project as a product backlog item. It will copy over all the information. It gets a new ID. It's now backlog item 50, but it's linked with a related link. It has nothing to do with a nothing to do link. It's the related link. It just added. It's a 26, and this item is related to 50. And this is how it works. Good, so the review meeting is over, and the review meeting is not only a presentation, so not only showing your customer, this is what we've done, if you like it or no, I mean the time is over, here it is, look at it. It's also a discussion, so once the customer typically sees something, he has new ideas. You know that, right? Once you show the customer working software, he will say, well, now where I see it in action, I have new ideas. Can't you make the button bigger, smaller, brighter, darker, more red, more white, or into a different color or whatever? So there will be a lot of input and feedback during such a meeting. This is expected. So you will capture new product backlog items. You will talk to the customer what is possible for the next sprint. The product owner will lead that discussion. So it's really more an informal discussion meeting and not only a one-way presentation meeting. You can really use that for customer interaction. It's the only meeting where a customer is invited, and you should use that. Not every customer likes that, though. Not every customer is used to deliver feedback for software products. I talk to customers, management level, CIOs, spending a lot of money in software projects, and they're really unhappy about the quality they get and that it does not conform to their requirements and everything. And I ask them, okay, well, how often do you inspect a software project before the final date? They look at me, why inspect earlier? It's like buying a car. I bought it in the catalog, I get it, it has to work, right? I mean, I defined it. I mean, why do I have to look at interim results? Like, well, okay, dear manager, have you ever built a house? Or, I mean, bought a house, probably. He's not building it himself, but anyway. And every manager says, of course I have a house, my own house, of course. Okay, how often have you visited the construction of your house? And actually, the answers are pretty amusing. One of the CIOs of a large company told me 3 times a day he's visiting the construction site of his house. When is he working, right? But that was clear for him. Yeah, I have to check that because they are building the foundation right now. What if they do something wrong? They have to change everything, the house. That would be really expensive. I mean, I have to check that every day. I'm like, yes, now you got it. Now you understood why you have to check software as well. It's the same thing, right? And this is how I try to make examples to get people to give feedback. It's not a problem every customer has, but around about half of the customers love to give feedback. Half of the customers have really, they don't see a point in giving feedback once they defined what they think they want. So giving that feedback is a very important part so we can prioritize accordingly to what we got as an input in that meeting. So in the last meeting, again, is the retrospective. So we will open the impediments list, and we will go through this, and we will see what we can do from this, or what can be done, and what cannot be done. We can ask questions. Everybody should contribute. Everybody is on that meeting from the Scrum team. That means the team members, the product owners, the Scrum master. It should be an open discussion about what can we do better in the next sprint. Find one or two actionable items that can make our next sprint more productive, that we can deliver more value without working more hours or something. That's not the goal is not like, oh, if we work on Sunday so we can deliver more. The question is, the same time we're using, how can we spend more effectively? Where have we lost a lot of time? Was it a great idea how we structured our work, or should we do it differently? Did we have to wait a long time for somebody else to deliver something? So dependency things. Very typically, in the first few sprints, until the team gets used to Scrum, there will be items like we should have asked the product owner more and more detailed during the sprint planning what he actually wants, because he's our customer, right? So we haven't asked enough questions to really define that end result. We just started developing as we do today. Like, right, you can start, well, we'll deliver the requirements later. You know that joke maybe, right? So it's really important to, before you start with your team, doing tasks, doing the work, to really be clear about what should be done, those user stories. And not every product owner knows how to write good user stories. And there's no course after you, like 2 hours after you've heard that course, that you know how to write great user stories. It's a contract between the team and the product owner, essentially. If both understand what the supposed outcome is and the supposed purpose, then it works. So user stories in one team can look differently as in another team. But it makes sense that they are very clear, precise, not too much text. You might add a few images as well. So if you might have the Visual Studio Super Ultimate Edition, then you have the possibility to use a few diagrams. You can, of course, use Visio, whatever you like, to create diagrams. But having... I have not added this to Visual Studio yet, but we can do that now. Modeling project. But having Visual Studio Ultimate allows you to use a few of those charts, and a few are pretty nice because you can use things like activity diagrams to show a workflow that is behind a product backlog item. Because a product backlog item is only text, right? And you will probably want to use one of those items. For example, there's a the use case diagram or the activity diagram, and then you can draw UML. Even if you don't understand UML, you understand people like this. And they do things. So we have employees. And we have senior employees. And and employees are allowed to use the use case add to numbers. The seniors are allowed to do that as well. Subtracting of two numbers is only allowed for senior employees. And the very clever employees find out that also with by adding two numbers you can actually subtract, but that's a different story. And now those diagrams, I mean, I'm not sure they look pretty. Oh, by the way, there's a great tip. You can actually exchange those very beautiful human beings with your own icon or your own image. Yes, you can have like team photos or photos of the customer, the product owner, whatever, and actually use those. That's a nice thing. Nevertheless, once you've created those diagrams to just visually explain something that is way better than writing a lot of text, you can go ahead and connect, for example, one of those items to a new product backlog item or to an existing one. So you can go to the product backlog and say, this has something to do with define... product vision ID 30, and now this is connected. You see there's an icon that there's a work item connection. You can now open the work item on the other hand, and going to the links and refreshing it, you see there's a link to a model link. You don't want to look into the URL behind this, model link, model bus, use case, designer, adapter, something. But those modeling projects are checked into version control. So once I double click, it will open the right file. It will actually zoom right onto that spot which we connected. Let's show that again. Double click, it opens the file and zooms to the spot. So those diagrams are pretty nice integrated. You can create them using Visual Studio Ultimate. You can still use and navigate and search them using Visual Studio Premium. Just Visual Studio Professional cannot show them. And if you're doing that in a more professional way, it might actually look like in Tailspin Toys. That's one of the sample apps. And there is a model. Models, this models thing. Get me the models. So instead of writing a lot of text, which nobody will read or understand, and also writing a lot of text usually means that there are multiple ways how you can misinterpret the text. It's always an easier thing to have a real model or a real image of something. For example, here is a core shopping experience workflow activity. This is something you can draw using those diagrams as well, and you can connect all those items now with new work items. So every station here, every state could actually be a product backlog item in your project or a user story if it's the Microsoft Agile template. Good. So if you're using TFS already, you probably started using with a template. You probably started with the Microsoft Agile template. Who is using TFS and the Microsoft Agile template? Who is using TFS and not using the Microsoft Agile template? The market share is true, but many people are not using. Are you using a Scrum template or one of the Microsoft ones? Scrum? Anyone else? I own one? Completely own one? Whoa, okay. That's also cool, yeah. Which makes sense, basically, to start with one and customize it to your own needs, yes. So, yeah. It's like the official market share. You are using Microsoft Agile. So there is no way to switch a process template once you start it, because those process templates are actually creation scripts. So what happens is it configures how your work items look like, how the reports look like, and everything. So once you decide you now want to use the new Microsoft Scrum template because you like it more, you're screwed. What you could do is you could do all these steps on your own, which means change all the work item types. Make sure you don't lose data while you do that. All the old existing work item types have the old states. So something that is active might then need to be moved using Excel, for example, to a new state that makes sense. Which is then new or approved. And what do I want to say? I had a great point in my mind. Oh, yes, and once you've done the work item types and they look like the Scrum template, you can actually delete all the reports and recreate them using a command line tool so they look like the process template you've chosen. You can do that for any process template. Just delete all the reports, go to the command line and ask him to recreate all the reports for that specific process template. So then you get all the Scrum reports that are in here. The Scrum reports include the burndown charts, obviously, one for the sprint itself, one for the release, which means multiple sprints until the release. You get one for velocity, which means it measures how many user story points your team has accomplished, has set to done during a sprint. So you're getting something like a burn rate for your team, a speed actually, and a velocity. And you can take this value into a projection and see how many items, if you continue that way, you're able to deliver in a release. So those three are typical Scrum reports, and Scrum says you don't need any more reports. There are a few from the testing and the build management system from TFS, but those are just for development purposes, not for the project management. So yes, you can recreate those reports, and you can also recreate the portal. If you have not started to use those SharePoint things, and you will have no problem of deleting the SharePoint portal, you can recreate it with a new Scrum template as well. both as a command line command, obviously. It's TFPT, teamfoundationpowertools.exe. You have to download that. And then it's add project reports or add project portal, so you can recreate those. So it's a lot of manual steps. Of course, everything can go wrong, as usual. But it's possible. I've done it twice now, and the result looks good. It looks like the new Microsoft Visual Studio template, the Visual Studio Scrum template. And I have the feeling that Microsoft is putting a lot more effort now into that template. It's the newest template. They are updating it more frequently than the other ones. And it will be part of the next version of TFS 2010. It will be integrated then, the Scrum template. Maybe the default. We'll see. We don't know. But I think it definitely makes sense, if you're doing Scrum, to look at Visual Studio Scrum, the template. Can you still do Scrum with MSF Agile? Of course you can. I think there are more things in Scrum you can do wrong than having a wrong template. It's so many things that in reality are not as easy as I described them today. Having a product owner that is the only one that talks to the team, having only one backlog where everything is perfectly described and in great shape, having an understanding and caring customer that loves to attend our feedback meetings. I think there's a lot that can go wrong. It's all out of the scope of a process template. There's still no update for TFS that human communications are not important or not required anymore or deprecated at some point. We still have to do most of it with talking and communicating, but I think Scrum is a great process to do that. And if you want to be successful or more successful as you are today, really try to have the right tool, but have a process that really works for your team. Doesn't have to be Scrum, but something Scrumish makes sense, I guess, something agile. And that combination really makes you successful. If you have any questions, I will be at the booth, at the Visual Studio Microsoft booth over there for the next hour, and enjoy the rest of Dev Days. It was fun being here, and I hope you will all do now Scrum, and next year you will tell me how successful you were. Good luck. Thank you.